This is Delicia Small, reporter for thesoulpit.com and Soul Pit Quarterly Magazine. Today I have with me April Tucker, the mother of R&B singer and icon Trey Songz. She's going to discuss with me how she, as a single mother, raised her children to be successful. First and foremost, I want to say thank you for taking a moment out of your day to speak with me. Now, Ms. Tucker, do you mind if I call you April?
Oh, no, please do.
Okay, thanks. Everyone doesn't know that you had your first child, Trey, at a young age. How did you overcome the challenges of being a teen mom?
I got pregnant at 16. I had Trey at 17. And I think the most instrumental part in my becoming a successful teen mom story was my own mother. My mother was very, very strong and supportive, and she raised myself and my two younger sisters mostly by herself, so I had a great role model in her, and additionally, she was very supportive. Trey's maternal grandmother, my mother, as well as his paternal grandmother, they were both around to pick him up from daycare when I had to be at school late or when I needed to study or whatever. So I had a great support system in my family, as well as my sisters were also helpful. So it wasn't just me. I think, firstly, my mom instilled in me that motherhood is the most important role I ever play. So when I decided that I was going to have Trey, I realized that my needs were secondary, and the only way that I could provide him with the environment and the opportunities that he would have had I waited later was to make sure that I gave him the same advantage that my mother gave me with putting him first.
Absolutely. Now, what have you learned from your own experience being a young mother?
I think I learned first and foremost that your circumstances don't define you. I remember the year that I got pregnant, it was like an epidemic in Petersburg where I was from. There were so many teen moms, and a lot of them didn't finish school. And at one point, I actually was so discouraged by the peer pressure that I didn't want to go back to high school. Then after, like I said, thinking about the opportunities that he would have had I waited till later, I realized that, you know, just because he was born to a teen mom did not mean that he shouldn't have a supportive mom, a mom with an education, a mom that could provide for him and so forth. So in deciding that I was going to have him, I realized that I needed to better myself to provide a better life for him. So I think that was the most important lesson I learned, that my circumstances didn't define me and that I could pursue all of the dreams that I had. They took a little longer for me to achieve, but that I owed that to him.
Yes, indeed. Now, who were the mentors and role models instrumental in your overcoming any challenges of parenthood or any other difficulties?
Again, my mom. I have two best friends that I've been friends with for over 20 years, my girlfriend Marion and my girlfriend Wanda, and they were both very supportive. I was married for a few years, and after getting separated from my husband, it was actually my friend Marion that took us in, myself and my Trey and my younger child. And she was a single person, you know, studying at Johns Hopkins, and she took me and my two children in so I could have a better opportunity after my marriage fell apart. So I've always had a good support system. All of women, I haven't had the best luck with relationships with my father or my stepfather, my ex-husband or so forth, but I've had a strong network of, I want to say sisters for lack of a better term, women who help hold me up and guide me when I needed it and, you know, point me in the right direction or, you know, tap me on the back of the head if I needed a little nudge or whatever. So it's been, you know, my mom, my sisters that are biological sisters, as well as my girlfriend Wanda and my girlfriend Marion. We're all still really close, and they're involved now. They're actually my children's godparents.
Now, I read in your bio that you are a college graduate. What was that life-changing moment for you that made you become determined to continue your education?
I remember everybody started before I did because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss the first steps and so forth with Trey. So I stayed home the first semester. So when I started a semester late, I had a really strong drive to go. Somewhere, I think I was about two and a half years, all of a sudden the path seemed like it was taking far too long for me. And I remember looking at other avenues of, you know, I took the test for the military. I tried to take a test for the post office, just trying to see what I could do that would provide for my son, because at the time we were on public assistance, and that just was not cutting it, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, running out of money at the end of the month for this, that, and the other. And I remember one day I just decided that I wasn't going to go back right before we came out for Christmas break. And I didn't tell anybody, but that was a decision that I had made. Well, by the time we got ready to start back in January, I realized that my quitting was going to alter the life that I thought Trey deserved. And like I said before, you know, just because you're a teen mom does not mean that you're going to have to be that statistic that most people end up being. Well, you know, I was on public assistance, but I went through the worst program to get bus tickets and free daycare and any benefit that I could get at the time that would help me in achieving going to college, because I figured that was going to provide me a better opportunity to take care of him. But the moment came when I realized I wanted to be an accountant, and I realized that the time that it was going to take and the coursework was going to detract too much from the time I needed to be a mom. So I sat down with my curriculum and I figured out what other category, what other, you know, study I could put, you know, follow and not lose all my credits that I would enjoy. Oddly enough, it turned out to be criminal justice, and in that moment, that was a defining moment, realizing that I owed Trey, and I needed to hurry up and do what I needed to do. It took me about 6 years of going to school, off and on, part-time in summers, but at the end of the 6 years, when I finally was able to do it, I attribute my love and my desire to make my son have a life better than what was expected based on me getting pregnant so young.
Absolutely. Now, I read in your bios that you have another child who is younger than Trey. What sacrifices did you make to raise your children to ensure their future success as well as your own?
The most recent sacrifice, I guess, after Trey's success, he wanted to move closer to home. We were living in Baltimore. Trey was up in Jersey trying to, you know, become Trey Songz. And my youngest son and I, we had lived away from my family, you know, all of his life, and he was about 7 or 8 one day when he came to me and explained that we were like outcasts. I said, why would you say outcasts? Because the whole rest of the family was in Virginia, and we were in Maryland by ourselves, just with my girlfriend that I mentioned was his godmother. And Trey's success was going well. We were missing a lot of family things, and I quit my job, and we left, and we moved to Virginia to be closer to my family because Trey was dividing his time too much. My youngest son, as far as is really missing out on the growing up that Trey had with us being from Petersburg. Like, he was missing out on hanging out with cousins, going to little birthday parties, getting to know have a really close personal relationship with his grandmother. And at the time, it seemed like a really big sacrifice because I had been at the job I had for 10 years. I was happy with my friends there, my support system, and so forth. We've been here 5 years now, and it was one of the best things that I ever did for them as well as myself, because it's helped strengthen, you know, family bonds and ties and connections. Other than that, I don't necessarily see everything else as a sacrifice, because in parenting, I believe that if we understand that everything that we do has to be in the best interest of our children, it shouldn't be seen as a sacrifice. That's just the way it is. You do what's in the best interest of your children, period.
Amen to that. Now, most statistics aren't favorable about our black men. What did you do in your parenting to keep your children safe and off the street?
I've always been stern but fair. And I was a probation officer for a number of years as well. Growing up in Petersburg, I remember a lot of the guys I went to high school with, you know, they had college scholarships for athletics and football and basketball and so forth. And a lot of the guys that I grew up with, it was very discouraging because they had these wonderful opportunities and they, for one reason or another, weren't able to take full advantage of them. And then there was this whole other population at the time when I graduated high school, crack was running rampant as far as drug dealers and so forth in this area. So I saw what it was doing to our black men, and I decided that the best way I could keep my children from those circumstances was to, I'm very stern. I had a 1-2-3 rule. The first time I tell you something, I expect you to do it. The second time I'm irritated, the third time I'm going to tap you, whether it be a tap, back of your head, tap on your bottom or whatever, and then there's consequences. And because my rules were always the same, I think they knew if you do A, mommy's going to do B. There is no wavering in the rules. And I think that helped them understand that, you know, I'm my youngest, he always tells me how I'm harder on him than other people's parents are on them and so forth. And I try to explain to him that, you know, life outside of your household, outside of right here, is going to be hard. It's especially hard for a black man. You got so many things stacked against you. If I don't teach you what the expectation of is now, when you go out there, you're going to fail. There's no way around it. Life is harder out there. So if you can't follow the rules in here, you're really not going to make it outside of there. Also, more importantly, I've taught my children that you have to earn what you get. My youngest is an adolescent. He's 15. He's going through regular adolescent things. He's a junior in high school. And quite often, he doesn't like my consequences because when he does something, I take the phone, I take the TV, I take the computer, I take whatever, because those are privileges. You have to earn them. And in a conversation I just had with my eldest son, Trey, last week, a little light went off, and I was really proud when he was recanting the story to me that he realized that, you know, he's happy with getting what he feels he deserved because he knows how hard he worked for it and how he's earned it. Because as a child, when he received things, he knew it was because he earned it or as a reward for something good that he did. I didn't just hand him gifts or prizes or presents just because he existed. You have to earn what you want in life. And I think that helped prevent a sense of entitlement. And I think people, not just black people, not just black men, one of the biggest problems we have is our sense of entitlement, where we feel the world owes us something as opposed to us earning what we get.
Yes, and it certainly shows that you being stern certainly paid off because both of your children are successful.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So tell me a little bit about that, because I know that you have the two children and they both are working on different projects.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Trey's success, we realized he could sing at like 14, and I remember a few, you know, fake producers and people came around locally claiming they could do things for him, and it was very discouraging in the beginning, and he was kind of shot down by a number of people that didn't think he had whatever it was, didn't think he could sing, wasn't the right time, this, that, and the other, and I remember we were walking around in the mall in Bergen County, New Jersey. And it was like before school started of his junior year, and he was kind of falling back. And he was really playful, so it was kind of off. So I asked him what was wrong with him, and in the conversation he was explaining that all of his friends were in the Upward Bound program for college prep, so they already had their career path laid out for them. And he didn't know what he wanted to do with his life. And I was like, you're 15, you have time to figure out what you want to do. And I said, but more importantly, I think I know what you want to do. And he kind of looked over at me, and he says, well, what is it? I said, well, I think, you know, you found your passion, which is singing. Because that is the one thing in the world that he's motivated about. You don't have to tell him when to get up to record. You don't have to tell him when to rehearse. You don't have to tell him to make. You have to stop him from making music to do regular things like eating. Even when he's off, he's recording, he records in his room, in a bathroom, in a hotel, anywhere. And that was the one thing I've ever seen him so motivated about. You know, he didn't like getting up early in the morning. He liked staying up late. He was really, really bright but didn't do as well in school as he should have because he didn't apply himself as much as he could have. But music was the one thing that he took off with. So in that conversation, I was explaining all this to him, that you found your passion, and most people go their whole lives and never figure out what the one thing is that they're passionate about. I said, now we just have to figure out a way for you to get paid doing it. Music is what you want to do. And I promised him a year. I said, when you graduate high school, I'll give you a year where you can concentrate on your music full time. After that year, you're going to have to go to somebody's university or to some branch of service or get a full-time job and go to a trade school, because I'm not raising, excuse my expression, trifling men. You're going to have something that you can contribute to society with. And he started, I think it was June 2002, he graduated. He went up to Jersey July of 2002 to pursue music. The first deal came in I think it was August of 2003. Now, to show you that I'm firm and I mean what I say, he had a little hoopty that I bought him for graduation, and the car insurance was due July of 2003. He was working, mm-hmm. Part-time as a barber's apprentice because he went to barber school and he was in high school. And I was like, well, Tremaine, your car insurance is due. It was something like $500 or $600 for the little hoopty for 6 months. And he was like, Mom, the deals are coming in. I have DreamWorks on the table. Atlantic is offering something, but nothing's been solidified yet. And my response to him was, you're going to bring me the car back and you're going to park it then. And he was taken aback. He's like, but this is coming in. I said, but I told you had a year. You're at 13 months right now. So to show you the level of commitment he had to what he was doing, he borrowed the money from his producer, and he paid his insurance and mine. But I didn't back off on, if you can't pay your car insurance, you're not going to drive the car. And everybody's like, oh, my God, that was so hard. No, it wasn't hard. I gave him the year. At the time, I wasn't doing so well financially, robbing Peter to pay Paul, struggling, trying to make ends meet as a single mom with my youngest son. So there wasn't a lot of money to go around, but what little I had, I offered him. A lot of the times he told me he didn't have because he knew it would take away from me providing for the household. So that's, my success story with Trey. He's a man of character. He does what he says he's going to do. He has great family conviction. My youngest son is Forrest, and what I'm determined to instill in him is that he's not going to be defined by his brother. He's a person of character worth knowing on his own. Very, very bright, very analytical. Sometimes, having a conversation with him, you have those duh moments where he doesn't realize that he just says something that you don't have any idea what he's talking about because he's into the science and the space and history and trivia and oddly known facts. And we had a conversation over the summer where we're trying to figure out what it is he wants to do. He's good at a number of things, so I'm trying to help him find what his passion is now and what we're looking at doing. Like he did an internship this summer with Def Jam Rap Star, where he was helping with picking out songs and editing the songs and the finding out what the lyrics were so they can use in the video games and so forth. And that was just one of the things that we're trying, because if he doesn't find what he wants to do with the rest of his life, we can definitely rule that out and move on to something else. So right now he's an upcoming junior, and he's studying marketing, and he's in DECA, and he's on his second foreign language. He didn't really care for Spanish, so now he's trying French. So I'm like, you don't know what you will want to do until you try a different number of things. So hopefully he's being exposed to enough things where some light will go off and he'll figure out that, this is what I think I want to do. And I explained to him that when you're good at a great number of things, it's difficult to pinpoint it, and only you'll know what it is. He also thinks that I'm expecting him to go to college. What I'm expecting him to do is to do what he thinks is going to make him happy. And that's more important to me than him having a degree hanging on the wall. If he can go to a trade school or have a talent or whatever, and that's what he finds makes him happy and he can find a way to get paid for it, I'm happy for him. So that's
absolutely
my youngest success.
Now people think it's not possible to raise children. Let me start over. People think it's not possible to raise children to become successful when being raised in a single female-headed household. Now, obviously, you taught your children responsibility and how working hard pays off. Beyond being a mother, what else would you like to accomplish?
Right now, I was a probation officer for 10 years in Baltimore City, and I enjoyed doing that. Right now, I'm a behavior counselor in an elementary school. I retired 4 or 5 years ago, but I like working with children. So right now, that's what I'm doing. But moving forward, Trey has a charity called Songs for Peace that he's been financing on his own. Right, we're in the middle of now trying to get our 501c to make it a nonprofit organization, and the plan is by the year's end that I'll be heading that, where we can further our cause for nonviolence campaigns and campaigns for youth to have after school programs. We do a big turkey drive, we do clothes donations and so forth. But the main focus of that is that Trey presents himself. Because he's in the limelight, we are going to use that to get our services out there. And he has some people in the community in different regions where he's gone to Chicago. He's done it. He's done it, I believe, in D.C. He's done it in Minneapolis. We did one up in Richmond a couple of years ago. And just explain to youth that there are other options. Because what I found in my work as a probation officer and what I instilled in my children, the only thing that separated you from the juvenile delinquents I worked with is that you made better choices. Our belief is that when children realize what their options are, that they make better choices. And through instilling in them, you don't have to follow what the, you know, the majority of people are doing, what the popular people are doing, what the troublemakers are doing, that being smart is important, and it's not dumb and it's not stupid. The education is key. You have to, a high school diploma is the bare minimum that you have to have that, and more importantly, that you have to see beyond your circumstances and where you are right now, in the neighborhood you're in, and the block you're in, and the house you're in, and that whatever you dream, using my son as an example, you know, dreams do come true, because what has happened for Trey doesn't happen to people like us from where we're from. So it's just amazing that little boy that I had as a teenager, that I necessarily didn't want to be a mother at that time. I didn't really want to have a child at the time, but I realized that was what I was supposed to do. Nowhere in the world, because you have told me 26 years ago when I decided I was going to have my son, that he would have the impact to affect people the way he does now. So in using Trey's success, I want to instill in youth to dream, to work hard, and to achieve their dreams. So that's what we're hoping to do with Songs for Peace.
Nice. Now, April, there's so much media attention devoted to your son's gift, which spills over to a need to know more, even about his family.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to know, you know, for all of the fans and for the listeners, you know, because everyone wanted to know about the background a little bit, you know,
okay,
and where he comes from. How important is it to protect your family's private life, and how do you do so?
Well, I'm very protective of my family, period. My mom is here. She's protective. My baby sister is very protective. And certain things are, I have this expression that certain things are for everybody, but everything's not for everybody. Like when Trey comes home and we're doing family time, no one's coming into my house asking for a Trey Songz autograph when I'm doing family time. We've had people, you know, walk up when we're celebrating one of Forrest's report cards in the middle of a movie, walk in and see Trey and want an autograph from Trey. And I'm very polite about it, and I hope they are understanding, baby, this is family time, and you don't get to intrude upon that,
mm-hmm,
because we don't have it very often. When
mm-hmm
he's in the public persona, he is Trey Songz, and that's his job every day. But in at home with family, he's Tremaine, the little boy, or Trey. You know, he's been Trey since he's about 4 or 5, and most of my family calls him Trey. And in the sanctity of that, Trey Songz is not going to come into that. So if I'm not letting Trey Songz come in, I'm not letting Trey Songz fans and so forth, because that's the only downtime that he gets and the only time we get along as a family. So we do little things like we'll sneak to the movies at an odd time of day, on a Monday night when no one is hardly there, or he'll try to go low with a baseball cap, and, you know, we'll, you know, go to a skating party for one of my nieces or my nephews. So we do get the family time, and I kind of act as a buffer when he's with us. When he's not with us, that's a little different, and that's a little hairier situation, because I realize a lot of people only know me as Trey Songz's mom, and in that situation, I fully expect, oh, my little kids, especially at the school I work in, they're gasping and they're shocked because they see me on TV, and
mm-hmm
now they see me walking in their schools, so they don't realize they weren't there last year. They're like, oh, my goodness, that's Trey Songz's mom. So, you know, I understand. They're like, how does a lady on TV in front of me right now?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different with people I've been raised with, and I, you know, we're from a small town. It's like 30,000 people population. I live 15 minutes south of there. But when I go to the grocery store or whatever, I'm right there. My whole family still lives there. So it's a little hairier situation with people I grew up with, because they're excited, and I understand that. Blair Underwood is also from Petersburg. I get excited when I see Blair Underwood, you know. So I understand that. But if you've known me as April Tucker, or my maiden name is April Golson, you're not going to define me by Trey Songz. You can mention that anecdotally, but first call me by my name. mm-hmm. because I'm a person worth knowing on my own merit, and I have more to contribute to the world than just being the mother of Tremaine Neverson, who became Trey Songz. So I'm trying to, that's a little struggle with getting people to understand that, that I'm very proud of him, and I appreciate the pride that they have in him. But I'm not going to talk about Trey Songz all day. And when they start that, I flash them 50 million pictures of my other baby and tell them all the wonderful things they don't know about Forrest Tucker.
Absolutely. Now, the Trey Songz My Moment, the reality show, it paved the way for his upcoming CD and also opened up the market for him. Tell me a little bit about that.
My Moment was a 10-part docuseries on BET, DuBose Lau Entertainment thing. And what I like about Trey Songz My Moment is it showed the Trey that we see. Because if you see him in magazines and the videos and on stage, he's this, super sexy balladeer guy singing about all kinds of stuff that, that his mama wants to know nothing about. But it showed the family side of Trey. It showed the businessman that Trey is. It showed the sacrifices and things he has to make with not having enough sleep, not eating when he's supposed to eat, having to be Trey Songz when he's sick, missing out on family functions, missing out on family time, and how much he cherishes all that. And it's funny because the things that he missed most would probably be his family, but he does all this for his family, so it's kind of like a double-edged sword. The lifestyle that Trey Songz has afforded us, and I tell people I have this book in me, From Welfare to Well-Off. The man that became Trey Songz took me from welfare, which is where we started when he was born, up until he was like 7, to being able to retire me 5 years ago. And now I work because I want to work, not because I have to. And I remember, many days of not knowing where the next, whatever was going to come from, my car being repossessed and all kinds of things. So My Moment opened up all of us to the world and showed the softer side of Trey, the business side of Trey. And I think the people that didn't know him got an appreciation for who he was as a man and wanted to know more about him. I think the people that thought they knew him got to see that, oh, he's so much more than just this sexy guy singing songs. He's a real man. He's a man of character. He's a man of qualities. He's funny. He's goofy. And the timing was absolutely perfect because it went all summer while he was, getting ready to prep for the album up until like a week or two before the album came out. So that function is great promo. And I think that has launched a lot of other things that is up and coming with him because he's very photogenic and very good looking. He has an amazing smile. And out of that, during one of the last episodes they showed, maybe episode 8 or 9, now he's the new male face of Rock Aware. And there's a new campaign coming up for Kodak where he's going to be one of the faces of Kodak. So I believe My Moment was instrumental in pivoting him to the next level of success. I believe he was well on his way because of his work ethic and, the quality product that he puts out. But that broadened his fan base so much.
Yes, it did indeed. Now, I got to ask, what was that moment like when you got the call that your son was signing a $30 million deal?
When he got I was just like, get the out of here. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm still in awe, and I tell him all the time, every time I think that I can't get any more proud of you, you do something else amazing. And it's totally surreal. I'm in awe. Every time, I'll go to one or two of the shows every tour he's on, and I watch him get better and better at honing his craft and make a better connection with the audience and hit some note he's never hit before. And I'm like, wow, I'm his mother. I'm supposed to see him as something amazing and special. But now to see that everybody else is finally jumping on a bandwagon and they see what I see. And I think it's bigger than I even imagined it would be. I remember it was probably 2000 when the first person told me that, oh, yeah, your son has it. He's going to be a star. I was like, yeah, whatever. Right, okay, fine. No, he's going to be a star. And I remember it was a guy that ended up working for him, Bobby Fischer, said, no, he's going to be a star, like Usher-type star. And at this, that time, I said the same thing, get the out of here. And I, that moment came back to me when he called me to tell me about the contract and he had gotten his deposit on that huge deal. I was like, wow. He said, that's where you were going and that's what you were going to be. And you're there.
Yes, and it, and you guys definitely are there. So as we can see that, you know, even though, you know, there's single mothers raising their children, there can be success that comes
it,
from that.
It can be done. It's difficult, but it can be done, and it's so well worth it. I wouldn't change anything because everything that has happened to us, myself, my son, Trey, my son Forrest, everything that has happened to us has prepared us for the moment that we're in right now. And not only do I like where we are, I love the life that we have. I miss my son. I don't get to see him as often as I would like to, but I saw him a day or two last week. I'm going to see him a day or two next week. And, you know, that wonderful man, that superstar, whatever, he still, you know, I still will smack him upside the back of his head when he needs to pull his pants up. When he comes in and lays down, comes in the house, he'll lay his head across my lap. That's still my baby. So it is a myth that, first of all, women can't raise men. I'm not saying I can teach him everything a man can teach him, but I raised one man successfully, and I got another one almost out the door. So know that it can be done. You just have to realize that they always come first.
Yes. Now, April, I wanted to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, thank you for your interest. I'm excited.
Because I know you're so busy with everything that's going on, and you know flying out of town all the time, and you know going to your son's performances.
It's been a whirlwind year and a half. I've done more traveling in the last year and a half than I did my previous 41 years. But I'm enjoying it. I am, and I'm thank you and your listeners so much for the interest. I'm very excited about the opportunities that you know, Trey's going to open up for Songs for Peace, as well as the opportunities that have opened up for him musically as well. Thank you.
You're welcome.